Welcome to our series of shows about mental health in association with Lambeth Public Health with me, Sinai Flairy, and my co-host, Patrick Vernon OBE. On today's show, we will be discussing the role of your faith and spirituality when it comes to your mental well-being.
Colourful.
Lambeth colourful, Mental colourful, Health Radio
Show. Colourful Radio.
Joining us in the studio today, we have a very special guest. I would allow you to introduce yourself to our listeners.
I'm Junie Mohammed. I'm the Director of Spiritual and Pastoral Care in Mental Health.
Hi, Junie. You've done a lot of work in the community for many years. I can remember you back in the day on the DRE program, Delivering Race Equality, and that was, you was one of the kind of senior, you were senior manager around doing community mental health services, and obviously lots happened since then. But you want to just explain to our listeners a bit about your journey as working in the field of mental health, particularly how and the work working with the community?
Wow, it's funny that you remember DRE program, and I was a community development worker and the chair of the London region. And that's just a part of the journey. But how I came into mental health, I worked for Lewisham Young Women's Project, and I had to come across a lot of mental health of women and girls in our community. And I was quite concerned about how people were going back to work, what support people were getting. And I formed a very good relationship with Family Health ISIS in the borough of Lewisham. And that then took me into Lambeth, because we had many mental health projects in Lambeth at that time who are no longer here. So my journey's been a long one. And in terms of the question that you asked me about why, did you ask me why?
The question I asked you, Junie, is you've worked in mental health, and also we're going to explore your current role at the Maudsley. But it's, I just want just a reflection of what's happened in the community over the years around, you know, we've been exploring on the shows. We've had various guests exploring around the issue of representation of black men. We've explored the current range of mental health services in Lambeth and South London. And also we've had perspectives from service users giving their take. But as a mental health professional, what's your take on where we are at, where we're at in terms of mental health services?
It feels like we've come full cycle, where our communities aren't having the opportunity to access knowledge about what is mental health and how to look after it. We've lost that ability to reach out and have, you know, like conferences and big workshops and be in a range of different events where mental health and well-being would be on the agenda. That has really eroded. So we've lost those opportunities to make that contact count. And as a result, for example, if your loved one has been on the ward and they get a day release to go and do their business in the community, their families are not very likely to have any training about mental health, how to cope, how to look after themselves. Because we talk about the fear and the stigma of mental health, but when it's your loved one, it's quite difficult to talk about being frightened of your own son, your own partner, your own husband, your own child, your own wife. That's quite scary, and that people still, in 2020, still have to call the police in a point of crisis. So even though you have prevention services where you can go before that point, the stigma of mental health, the person suffering often doesn't have the confidence, or sometimes doesn't even know where to go for help or believe that these places can help. So often when an incident happens or a crisis happens, often our families and our loved ones don't know where to go for help. And even when they do, it's the confidence to ask for that help, trusting that there's going to be some control and involvement. There's still a lot of fear. So my concern in that gap over 20, 30 years, I'm talking about from mid-80s, we still, our families aren't being taught, well, what is mental health? How do I recognize it in my house? How do I have the conversation? So it's brokering that in the household, because it's not just you, but how do I go to services without feeling I've let you down? I'm gonna disappoint you, you know. And that's because people get attacked from reporting to the services or to their GP that their loved one's broken down in the house. And often people can't cope with being judged that way. One family member said to me recently, they're still not being forgiven.
Wow.
And so there's a risk in telling to get help for you that we don't want the situation to worsen. And if I don't tell and you become worse, I can be putting myself and everybody else in the household at risk from a worsening condition.
Colourful Mental Health Radio Show.
Back with Patrick Vernon, OBE and Sinai Flairy, still discussing the role that our faith and spirituality play in our mental well-being. Now, I'm so pleased because we're joined by two more guests in the studio, along with Junie Mohammed. Please introduce yourselves for our listeners.
Okay, my name is Pasida Langley Perkins, and I'm co-pastor at the Church of God of Prophecy, House of Bread.
Cindy from Ilview Community Services in the London Borough of Lewisham, Telegraph Hill, and we're also part of the Telegraph Hill Network.
Great. So it's great to have you both on the show, and we're exploring with Junie as well the whole stuff around faith and spirituality. Can you just maybe start a bit about the work that you do in the community around your practice in faith and how you got involved into the issues around mental health?
I'm here in London. We came to pastor the church, House of Bread. And of course, Cindy, I got involved with Cindy because I'm very interested in community work. And soon meeting Cindy, I got onto the pastoral course in mental health. And I've never looked back since. And as a pastor, my understanding is that mental illness, if it is affecting the society, then of course it is in every local church. And soon my queries, my question and my understandings, you know, of mental illness and of course mental health, well-being and the part faith leaders should play as the community is with us day in, day out. And the part, the really great part that we can do in our role as leaders to affect our community in very positive ways. And I just took it full on and run with it, really.
So what was the turning point for you to then decide, yes, I need to get involved in this area, how to extend your practice as a preacher?
To be honest with you, I'm a realist and I love people. And I looked back when I was in Birmingham in our local churches, and I've had, I wouldn't say incidents, but areas where I've seen people in church acting out, you know, and realize after that they needed help. They just need someone to sit them down, talk to them. What is happening? What are you going through? And as a church, we have the opportunity to intervene before it gets to crisis level. And I remember going to the altar, praying with a young lady who was really exuberant in a way that didn't sit well in my spirit. I talked peace to her. I prayed for her. But by the next morning, a friend told me she was sectioned. And that affected me for such a long time. And she asked that I should visit her. And after that, it just never left me. So I quickly knew and could sense the difference when someone is in trouble emotionally than really experiencing the blessings, you know, in church. And coming to London and getting the exposure on the course, that was it for me. A lot of incidents and things that I've seen just dropped into place. And so it is only right that when you get the knowledge on and the understanding, you use it as well to help, you know, with the word of God. And what we do in church, everything that we do, the structure of church is to enhance mental health, the avenue for testimony, for encouragement, to share, even to sing and rejoice. It so works for positive mental health. And I tell you, that course really clears up so much for me. And I'll just encourage and do all that I can do to intervene before it gets to crisis stage.
Okay. That's great. And what about your experience and perspective on your involvement?
Oh, my perspective with mental health goes back a long, long way. Possibly about 2013. And I think I went in the spiritual and the pastoral course. So 2013 or 2014, thereabouts. And as usual, Junie always said to me, Cindy, you go from the top, not from the bottom. I had this vision about running a mental health conference. Knew nothing about it, nor where to start. So as usual, I did my research and went knocking at doors. And I went to Southwark, in fact, somebody who worked for, what is it, England?
NHS England.
NHS England, one of the commissioners. And, you know, told her, and she was very, very helpful. And she was the one who told me about the spiritual and pastoral course in mental health. And I thought, me, can't do it. But I wouldn't say anything to her. I ponder it in my heart. And then when I heard about the fees, if you can't afford, you'd have to pay back this. I thought, I ain't got no money. And then Junie phoned me. And then she encouraged me to go on this course. And that's it, basically. And when I got on there, I had my little flyers already printed for the mental health. For the mental health conference, first one. While I was giving it out, Junie turned around and said to me, I was the one you were looking for. I think that was about August time. I was the one you were looking for, and that's it.
So you organise a mental health conference?
I do organise mental health conference.
And was it on the basis of faith and spirituality? Was it much broader than that? And did the course help you to develop the conference or give you ideas?
The course helped me to connect with people that I could bring in. But I think, when I think about it, the Lord was working on the inside, and that was what he wanted me to do. And because he wanted me to do that, he connects me to people. Yeah. And so we started off with the mental health conference. We've done Beyond the Veil. This year it was My Story, and Brockdom,
Yeah, broke down, get up.
Broke down, get up.
Separation.
Separation and loss. So we have done a wide spectrum, basically. And we're quite fortunate because from the beginning, our previous minister, Bishop Ted Roy Powell, and his wife, Alni Powell, they were very supportive. I think for the first 2 years, and when they decided, oh, well, I don't need to hold Cindy Ann anymore. She's got Junie, and she and Junie can run. Mm-hmm. We just got on, and we just did what we needed to do, organise it, get people in. And then about a year ago, it just developed from there. Mm-hmm. And then Reverend Langley Perkins and Reverend Cleveland Perkins joined us, and the first year they attended our conference and they were hooked. And we're so fortunate, for years upon years we've got Dr. Agre Burke. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and every year without fail that man has supported our conference all the way through. So we're grateful. We're grateful for God. We're grateful for his calling and grateful for the people that he's put in our life to lead this very, very important ministry in the church and in the community, because lots of people are suffering with mental health and its challenges and don't know where to turn for help. Yeah, but we are there in the community. It's open to everyone, regardless of culture, nationality. And it's every first Saturday in October. We don't change that. So people know if you miss it this year, you know it's first Saturday. Okay?
Yeah, the question I've got for both of you, and maybe Junior, you might want to come in, is... Would you say there's lots of black churches, and I'll touch on, we'll explore the whole stuff on Islam in a bit, would you, Junie? But there's lots of black churches up and down the country. There's lots of black churches in Lambeth. There's probably there's loads. Do you think the average church understands the needs of their parishioners? And if there is a situation where they need that support, how you explained that you got involved and you've not looked back. Is that typical, or is there what more work needs to be done to engage black churches around this issue?
I would say understanding of what we need to do is key, because having been on the course, I understand so much more. Simply that mental illness is out there, and there is this stigma on mental illness. And what we need to understand is that everyone is on a spectrum, and that depression is mental illness, dementia is, and every one of us at one stage or the other, it could be at your workplace, you're stressed, you're overworking, you're not resting enough. And if you don't look after your body, in church we learn about being good stewards of your body. You know, it affects everyone, and it's the stigma. And I believe the stigma that's attached to it cause maybe the churches, it's in every church. As long as people attends church, the society attends church, it is there. And what is important is that we get the teachings so we can understand and have the discussion. My role, really, as a faith leader, is to introduce the topic from my end at the top and to talk about it, and to encourage every strata of the church to talk about it in the ladies' ministries, the men's ministry, children's ministry. Talk about it, get the full understanding so we can support each other. And the greatest thing for me is that we address the issue before it reaches critical stage. And
are you a typical pastor in that sense, or is there more work that needs to be done in the churches?
There more needs to be done, because to be honest, leaders in the church or pastors sometimes a very, should we say, hard topic is up, and we believe to avoid it or to leave it alone is good enough. It's not good enough, but we just need to be brave. It is happening. Discuss it. It is uncomfortable. And again, there are the clinicians in the church who, because I remember when on my course, I threw out a survey and I got back where some people, they were like saying to me, why don't you leave it to the clinicians?
Wow.
Yes, I got that back. They were telling me in some words, you're not a trained mental health clinician. Leave it to the clinicians. There is that in the churches as well, where there are barriers. But I have been on the course, I've had the discussions, and I know that I am a key person to talk about it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be a mental health clinician. I know who I am, I know my role, because I'm working with people. So the pastors, the leaders, should not be afraid, but to address it from the pulpit, because there are so many different ways to address the issue, to bring it to at all levels.
Yeah, I think what you're saying, Reverend, is very, very powerful. To hear a Reverend say, you know, you've encouraged people in your church to talk about mental health, whether it's in the women's ministries or right down to the children, that's very powerful. Yeah. I wanted to ask you, like, what's the response been from people attending your church in terms of being open and talking about their mental health? As it's come from the top downwards.
To be honest, in House of Bread, we are at an advantage, because coming there and through Junie and Cindy, so many of our leaders have had training, and also Bishop Ted Roy, he spearheaded the move. So House of Bread is at an advantage, but it's my experience across the wider church at different local churches, and seeing and understanding the taboo. In Birmingham as well, we are fortunate in a main church there, and I don't mind calling Aberdeen Street Church. There are clinicians there that strive to push it forward, but it is needed more. In I can only name two churches. Regionally, we address it, but we need the scope to be wider. If there's one in every four adults with mental health, and it's rising with young people, then we really need to take it more on board, discuss, learn and understand about it, get past the stigma and address it.
So what really, that was so powerful, you know, that I'm so proud of, so proud. But one of the things we need to appreciate is mental health is still taboo. And there's a stigma.
Yes.
So somewhere like the House of Bread has several graduates from the course. As much as we engage the overseer, who found me to be an evangelist for mental health. That, so a lot of the titles that I wear in the community is director, evangelist, and I wear them all with pride. So it takes people to get on board. But a lot of the black churches that you wanted to specifically talk about, I find that it's not that they're not aware of mental health. They wanted to deliver a church program. So the program takes precedence. So it's how to have the conversation to ensure mental health is on the agenda and in the program in a way that suits that delivery. Because not everybody feels confident to address it from the pulpit. That may not have been their training in, because mental health, you don't get that at theology school. I'm fortunate. I know Bible and Quran. So I can teach on Prophet Job and all these other prophets and examples in the Bible who went through distress, they went through psychosis, they had anxiety, you name it, and use those characters to illustrate that from the pulpit, you know. So some of the black churches have given me that platform to do it. And then over time, they've developed the confidence. So I think it's a confidence issue to address it. Also, I think there is a hidden barrier that if our prayer and our faith is not sufficient to overcome mental illness, what are we here for? That is the unspoken conversation that is also sitting there like the elephant in the room. So that is why my approach to delivering the course is not to challenge your theology, but to add to the agenda that mental health is common, even in the ministry team. And there's people like Bishop Carraway of Southwark Diocese who had the misfortune to, his son was killed. And he speaks about mental health with such compassion. And so when we start to talk about compassion and empathy, it allows people to fit it in the agenda. So the black church has a long way to go. And it's not just the black church. It is the mosques, it is the temples, it's all the groups, because it's how people see themselves and what they're going through and what their service is supposed to provide. It doesn't matter if I went to the Tamil community or the Sikh community or the Jewish community. They want to feel that they can deal with it within, mm-hmm. in their way. And it's how we have to have more time to work with people to enable them to do it their way that feels safe and not outside the ethos of their scripture.
Do you still feel like, especially in faith communities, I think you've sort of touched on this, Jeannie, that there is a taboo, or discussing your mental health is sort of like still prohibited? And how do we sort of get past that? I mean, Reverend spoke about, you know, introducing more open conversations about mental health in church. But I think in general, there is a taboo. It is a taboo subject in the black community and probably in faith groups as well.
In society,
yes,
it is still a stigma. Even though we know more people are talking about it, I am the royal part of the African family. I'm not the royal family of England. And so therefore, for me to get the platform that our royal family has done in leading, in promoting good mental health and reducing stigma, we need more of that to come from regional direction and policy to have it embedded. So even though it's come up under safeguarding, that all registered churches have to address mental health through safeguarding and well-being. That's where it often comes up. And so they'll have somebody named to do that, as opposed to how is that really embedded. And it comes up again when faith leaders go to visit people who have ended up on the wards, or when somebody is in a crisis and one of the congregation says, can you come to my house? And they're going to see a situation, and then they need to know what to do and how to walk with that person, that they feel safe and that they're not going to be left in the hands of other people. And I think that's where it comes up. So there is a lot of work to do, a lot. So I wanted to just say very quickly, though, sorry, that we've got a project happening in Southwark that links or builds onto this, where they want faith leaders to understand mental health as a part of the faith challenge or faith action plan. But again, the stigma doesn't allow people to come out. So people say words, but to follow and to act is a different step.
Mm-hmm. I'd just like to quickly add as well that when we look at the stigma and the stigma around mental health, it really is the culture that is in society first, and then that society comes into the church. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't start from the church. It starts from the culture outside and the society that comes in the church. So I wouldn't address it from a church point of view. It is there, so it's for the church to look at it and minister to the issue as well. Because when you look culturally in the families, in society, the black family, the stigma, it's that shame to the family. Would you want your son or your daughter to be married in that family because they are, so to speak, mad or crazy? So that society comes in the church as well. So the church really have to be trained and understand to deal with mental health issue in a sensitive way. You know, with compassion and understanding. And just to say, annually in our church, we have a ladies' retreat where around 300 women meet together. And the whole structure of that retreat, which is, it happens to be run by one of our national leader who is a director in the mental health. And the way that retreat is structured, it really ministers to women's health in terms of the ministry, the word. And there is that session where we are pampered. We get to appreciate, we get to dress up, we get the praise and all of that positive well-being to our spiritual, our mental, and our physical health. So it's the society coming into the church, brings the issue, and it's for us as the church to also, as we minister to what we call sin and the failings of human, to also minister and learn as much as we can to our mental health illness and address our mental health faith as well.
But one of the key points you're bringing up for me is how do we broker the conversation? Because I might say, how are you, in passing? Mm-hmm. Do I want to hear the response?
Yeah.
Have I stayed and even looked you in the face to hear the response? Well, most of us have joined in society and we're walking past people and
that's
not
true.
Hearing the response. And so the other thing is when we start to speak and it's not what we want to hear, we say, it is well. That's shutting the person down. Hold that. We have different ways of, if we're not going to say, I'm fine, we shut people down. So there's something about a campaign that says, it's okay to have the conversation. Mm-hmm. It's normal that not every time everything in our life is going to be fine. We all experience different issues and disasters or hurt, loss. How do we have the conversation that we can save lives? Because on the other hand, if we're shutting people down and we're losing lives and we're shocked about loss of life, and the shame can allow us to lose lives when we could have prevented that death. That death was preventable. So we want to improve people's lives, their experience. And I can still be a part of a fellowship.
That's true.
I can still be the leader.
That's true.
I can still teach, but I can be inclusive that my mental health matters. Oh. My mental health matters. I matter. Mm-hmm. You know, and make sure that the scripture and the teachings embrace my mental health.
Yeah, I think that's very important what you're saying in terms of, like, automatically if you don't like the response that you get, oh, not right now, I gotta go, I'm busy, or if someone doesn't say, oh, how are you, I'm fine, it's all saying I'm fine as well is almost like an automatic response, even though inside you might be having a really bad day or you might be feeling a bit low. A lot of us just say I'm fine because it's become the uniform response. So I think what you're saying there is something we should, it should be one of the things we take away from today's conversation.
No, I think absolutely. And in terms of the work that you're doing, because you're organising events and the stuff around the fellowship, what more do you think can be done based on the learning, the teaching, the kind of contact you have with other faith leaders?
I do think that we do reach out to faith leaders and the community, so it's open to everyone. But I think the stigma is still a big barrier. Yeah. But until we break down that stigma, continue to chip away at it, it's not going to go away overnight. No. Because it's epidemic in society.
That's right.
And it's also the way you were brought up. You know, this is happening in our family, we keep it within our family.
That's right.
You do not go outside and discuss it. So we will end up with the problem. But thank goodness, as we continue to run our conferences, we're saying to people, come and talk. It's okay. It's okay. Because every one of us have mental illness, or the challenges in our life at some stage. Even in a day, you know, when we are on this continuum, where are you at this moment in time? Depends on what happened to you in your life. So you can go from a 10 to a 0 in just like that. Mm-hmm. So it's all about having compassion for one another. And not passing each other by. Now, when somebody said, it's all right, sometimes you have to leave them and said, fine, can we talk another time?
Leave the door open.
Leave the door open. But don't just said, fine, and you go away. Because that person may be crying out inside. But if you say to them, we'll speak again, and you have that door open, and you see them again, and you say, is it all right for us to speak now? They may want to talk.
Can I ask you a question on that? Do you think there's enough compassion in the community today compared to 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago? This is an open question.
Go on.
It depends. It depends on what you are actually looking for. Okay, I think when the most black people came over here before, they live in a more closer network. So then you'd have a bit more compassion. Now we're so open, we're so isolated. What do you think, Julia?
With the advance of technology, we are become a more insensitive society.
Absolutely. Close. Yes.
Because of the exposure, we are desensitized, so to speak. We can see the worst state of a human being and just carry on eating whatever we're eating and watching. This is where society. So because of the wide exposure, whether it's true or not, what we see, we tend, if we can eat without it touching us, more than likely we will walk past someone falling down on the street as if it's not my problem. And that is what is happening. Nothing is our problem, personal problem anymore. Leave it to whoever is in charge. But until we come back to know that every soul matters, and that love, you know, and the question you ask, what we used to experience before, years and years ago, from our grandparents and our moms, it is waning. When we can be cutting down our colleagues of same color in the street and walking past, it says something. And it would be remiss of me to leave here and not say what the Bible says. In the last days, the love of many shall wax cold, men being lovers of themselves than lovers of others. This is becoming a selfish society where everybody look out for themselves and walking past, you know, walking past and leaving someone else to look after. And it's to say, how are you to someone, and to stop and listen for the response so they won't say, I'm fine, and walk past. How are you really? So they know you care and you want the answer and you are prepared to spend time to walk with them. Mm-hmm. Until we start to be less selfish and not just, because this society has become, you know, such a grasping society.
But we also got a discriminatory society.
Yes.
Because you will see the difference in the way the media,
yes,
reports on certain crime, depends on who's committed the crime or what incident has happened. So when we started to talk about, is there more compassion or less compassion? I think people select what they want to care about, what they want to hear about. And in the NHS, you have to remember, we had to be taught about reintroducing bedside manner. Because there was something happened in the nature of society that made people feel quite cold, mm-hmm, and not really want to connect with other people. So it's brought us full cycle, really, to what they call the five ways of well-being. And one of those elements is to connect. To have compassion means to connect. If I lost my life on the bridge, would I run towards to help you, or am I running away? A lot of the issues today are people wanting to take responsibility for their own feeling, or in a moment to be the hero for somebody else. And I'm going to leave you with this story. I always teach it about the Good Samaritan.
I was just going to bring up that, in fact.
I have taught in many places. And I said, if you can not just walk by, but be that person that put the person on the donkey, sent them to the inn and paid for their stay to make sure they were safe and fed and had somewhere to sleep. I say it like this. Mental health is common. You know right now in your own family, because it touches everybody. Mm-hmm. Put some of that lovely Sunday dinner mm-hmm. in a Pyrex dish. Pop by the hospital. Let people know that they still belong in a family. You could improve their well-being so much. There's lots of your own family isolated and ostracized.
Come on, Junie, bring it.
Because they have a mental illness. I'm serious. And what difference it would make. You know what? You run across my mind today and are just dropping off some food. Even if you don't feel comfortable to stay. But let them know they're thought about. They still belong in the family. We still want you. And that for me is compassion. And I have met people who pay their tithes, tell me that they are going to be that one that's walking on by because they are scared of it. And I know people have had bad experiences, but we need to educate one another to reduce the incidence of bad experience, that we can have the conversation as a family, know what to do and to help, that we can turn those bad experiences into positive experiences and keep each other well. That's what our work is about, saving lives and improving the quality of our existence.
Any lasting messages from you, Cindy?
Well, Judy's just took by thunder with the Good Samaritan, because we need more Good Samaritan in our society. And we need people to carry the torch when it comes to mental health and well-being. We need to teach people to look after their mental health and well-being and not to be afraid to speak out if they need help. And there's one project that we were involved in.
Oh, yes. So On Track project. And that project came about because of the high rates of black people being detained under the Mental Health Act in our psychiatric system and more likely to have a diagnosis of schizophrenia and all of these things that we've spoken about today. And On Track is working with faith groups, and I am working with On Track. We won a bid actually from Guy's and St. Thomas to look at getting some more research around this, but how to include the faith groups to want that education, to bring mental health into the faith setting. And we've got a little animation that is based in the church. And it gets people having those conversations. Even the things that we didn't want to really speak about is in the speech bubble that people are thinking.
Yeah.
And it also illustrates what the health professionals can also do to help us to reduce stigma and discrimination, that it's not to medicalize everything, but to bring in how to support people and their families and include their church or their faith group as a part of that support. So please look at On Track. That's O-N. Is it dash or hyphen? Track, T-R-A-C, and that's project. And it's you'll find us there. But you can contact me, junie.mohammed. at slam.nhs.uk, and I'm here.
And where can our listeners reach out to you as well, Reverend, if they want to get in touch with you or if they want to come down to your church?
We are based at 39 Kitter Road, and that's in New Cross. And it's SE14 5TW, and it's the Church of God of Prophecy, House of Bread. And I really like to leave by encouraging my colleagues and the leaders in the great Church of God of Prophecy just to carry on ministering and to carry on loving, because it's the love in our church and it's the ministry, it's the worship, it's coming alongside our brothers and sisters and listening to them, talking to them and loving them that would help us, you know, to talk, to have that breakthrough. And my passion is that we can do it. We can help each other so that it doesn't reach it.
Crisis point.
It wouldn't have to reach that point of medication. Mm-hmm. There's some things beyond our control.
Yes.
But what we can do to talk, to support, to comfort, mm-hmm. and to come alongside, we continue to do that so we can talk it through. We can signpost our people to professionals and know that what we can't do,
they can do.
The professionals can do it. Talk therapy is really good. Mm-hmm. Talk therapy is really good. We're not going to be able to pray and speak in tongues to help everyone. And don't get me wrong, there is power in the Holy Spirit. There is power in the blood of the Lamb. But we should also recognize the signs and say, I'd like to send you to someone who can help you further along. Mm-hmm. Okay?
And go with people. So we have to walk with
people. Support.
And see ourselves as part of people's care plan.
That's right.
Because our faith is very important to us. So we're not saying we're instead of, we want to be included.
Yes.
And we are people that are trusted and respected in the community, and that people should be able to come to us and ask for help. And then we can bring in the care and wrap around the care. It's not one or the other, but we should be working closer together.
I think that would be so reassuring to people, you know, who attend the church or who attend the mosque, to know that there's somebody like them also walking that walk with them as well. And, you know, talking is one of the therapies we can get if you are referred for extra help. So to start with talking is a great step forward. And I don't know what else to say, Patrick. We've covered so much.
We have covered quite a lot, and it's great that all the work that you're doing, and I know that you're working, I mean, you said you've worked with 300 faith leaders over the last 10 years, covering all the faiths as well.
But most faiths, other than the Jewish community, and not much of our Asian community, you know, like Hindu. But we've got Quaker, Rastafari Movement UK, we have Catholic, we have many people from our diocese, we have our Church of England, we have lots of Baptists, Seventh-day Adventists, we have lots of our White Garment Church, we have different types of ministries like Christ Redeemed. They're like a Church of God. We have Winners Assembly. We have Mountain Miracles of Fire. We have the Apostolic Church, All Nations. You name it, right across the board, King's Church, all different types of churches across South London, that's Southwark, Lambeth, Lewisham and Croydon.
Absolutely. It's been such a pleasure having all three of you in the studio with us today to unpack so much surrounding faith and spirituality and our mental health and our well-being. I want to thank Cindy, I want to thank Junie Mohammed, and I want to thank Reverend Perkins for coming in. You have been listening to Sinai Flary, Patrick Vernon OBE, discussing faith and spirituality and how it can affect our mental health on Colourful Radio.
Colourful.
Lambeth Mental Health Radio Show.
Colourful Radio.